relationships, religion, Chris Harrington's reality. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online.
In store, love is the drug, and I need to score. Showing up, showing up, hit them run. Boy meets girl, where the beat goes on. Stitched up tight, can't shake weak. Love is the drug.
It's all about the love, catching that buzz. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's hump day, Wednesday, October 3rd, 2012. The only first Wednesday of October, 2012 in the history of humanity. And getting right to it, beautiful humans, it is time for Chris Harrington's reality. Yes, each week at this time, we welcome the intermediator from Southern Texas. Please say hello to the man, the legend. You know him, you love him. I'd have a difficult time living without him. Chris Harrington. Chris!
Hi. Very good. Good evening.
How are you?
South Texas, huh? That's like 800 or 900 miles away from where I am. That's how big Texas is. I'm in East Texas.
My apologies.
Behind the Pine Curtain.
Behind the Pine Curtain.
Yeah.
I like that. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. I'm it's been a very busy day, getting a lot of stuff done and prepping the house for a good time here in the next couple weeks. So it's time to do the fall chores.
Speaking of prepping, our presidential candidates here in the United States of America, they've been doing a lot of prepping for the big debate that is just starting now. We're up against Obama and Romney tonight. It's Harrington Klein versus Obama Romney.
Yeah, no problem.
Before we,
I have faith.
yeah, you do. Before we dive into the topic at hand, as an aside, to what extent do you hold that regardless of who is elected in November in the U.S. of A., which, of course, affects people all around the world that are listening.
Sure.
Does it make a difference?
Does it make a difference in what way?
In who's elected?
What our policies are?
Yeah, pretty much.
I think that you could say that there's a certain amount of leaning or a flavor that changes depending on who's, you know, in the White House. It doesn't matter to me in the sense that my president is my president, you know, regardless of who's in the White House, that person is the person that I respect for his office. And I appreciate the not only the power that he holds, but also the responsibility and the incredible stress that he's under. So regardless of who it is, my hat's off to him.
The amount of stress that whoever holds that office has got to be under is, I would say, for most mortals, is pretty incomprehensible.
It's unbelievable. I know everyone's taken a look at the photographs, before and after photographs of someone, you know, before they actually enter the presidency and after they've been in for 4 years, let alone 8 years. It's a tremendous change. It's stressful.
The responsibility is immense. I think one of the only people that didn't really change was Ronald Reagan. I don't know what that says about him.
I'm not sure it says anything about him except he is a great makeup artist.
He probably had a good makeup artist, yeah. No doubt, but all these guys do. I mean, probably even Obama has makeup on tonight.
Sure, but still, it's stressful. It wears on you.
No doubt. Thing about stress, you guys, we know that the number one stress factor in our lives is change. And forget about the responsibility. I mean, that's immense. When you have the code to the nuclear exchange, that's a massive change in a person's life, not sure. To mention the responsibility that he or she would have for literally hundreds of millions of people, billions of people. But because so much changes so quickly, and they are literally infused with information on a constant basis, that alone would be stressful. Forget about the responsibility.
It would. The updates. Just keeping up with your updates on Twitter would be insane.
Some could make the argument that if you're a major Facebooker, that is stressful with all the information that's coming.
You know, I found that it actually is pretty stressful. I mean, I got pretty glued into Facebook for a while, and I've kind of taken a step back simply because it was cutting into my workout time. I think I was less healthy physically because I was on Facebook too many hours a day.
No, I
need to move more than that.
I get that. The thing about change, you guys, it's the only constant in life. And even good change is stressful. I think that people forget that. We think that, you know, stress or change that is coming that is at least perceived negatively initially is stressful. But even things that we perceive right from the get-go as good is also stressful because
it's true. And there's failure, and we forget that. We don't do everything perfectly well, and so there's always a learning curve with everything, and things are complex. And failure in and of itself is not the issue. It's quitting when you fail. Mm. That's the real issue.
Wow. All right, well, that's a good place to shift gears here.
Okay.
Because as I pointed out on this webcast and on the newsletter, that quitting, whether I quit or things quit on me or people quit on me, has been a major theme. And yet,
sure. Yet
I haven't quit, because here I am, still talking.
That's right. That's right.
What's up with that?
I think that, you know, we persist until we don't. I mean, that's so straightforward, and it's so commonsensical that it goes without saying. But we have to repeat it to ourselves. You know, when people in our lives die, or if you get a divorce, or if you go through any of those major changes that are so stressful, you pick yourself up, and you keep on going. You know, there's a line from a movie with Bruce Lee. He says, "I don't care how many times you knock me down, as long as I get up one more time than you." And I think there's the truth behind that is that we have to remember that, you know, the opportunity in front of us always looms. You know, you can quit at any time, but you could also persevere.
Are you familiar with the best-selling book, Man's Search for Meaning, by Viktor Frankl?
Yeah, I read that many years ago.
Frankl was a Holocaust survivor, you guys.
Yeah.
And he was a psychotherapist before going into Auschwitz, the Nazi death camp in Poland. He's German. And he was a student of Sigmund Freud. And at the time, the concept of mental health, as things were emerging, was they literally called it mental health. And they equated mental health being a lack of conflict in one's soul. And then Viktor Frankl, Jewish man from Austria, gets thrown into Auschwitz, loses his entire family. And he had started a thesis in a book before he was arrested and thrown into the death camp. And he knew that his entire family had been killed by the Nazis, but he had not been killed. And he noticed that everybody that did not commit suicide, when you committed suicide in the death camps, you just didn't get out of bed. Could you imagine, Chris, the amount of people that would be committing suicide today just by not getting out of bed? But he noticed a common denominator between all the people who actually got out of bed and it was that they were living something for bigger that was bigger than themselves. I think there's a lesson there, and you guys get the book. It's a thin book. It's a powerful book. It's called Man's Search for Meaning.
It certainly is powerful.
Yeah, Victor V I K T O R Frankl F R A N K L. The book changed my life for sure. And
awesome.
And Frankl's thesis was that you need a venting to relieve the stress, or what he called the suffering. He said suffering is the common denominator in all human experience. People suffer on different levels. But if you don't have a venting, the smallest amount of suffering can suffocate you. And
sure.
But if you do have a venting, you can endure the greatest amount of suffering. How fair do you think it would be, Chris, to say that the people that do quit, literally quit, whatever that means, either committing suicide or slow suicide or just
right.
literally giving up, they don't have a venting. They're not living for something bigger than themselves.
I think that's a large part of it, really, sincerely. I think that's part of the work that I do is just simply listening to people and allowing them to tell their story. I did the same thing when I was teaching, and the other teachers and the administration wanted to know what my big secret was. And I said, well, you know, I'm simply allowing that these people have a story to tell. I let them get their cards out on the table, and then we make use of that stuff and we go on with our lives. I respect them. And that was like a mind-blowing thought to the school system. But, you know, what they really hadn't thought of was that these are younger people, and to them, proportionally, their troubles are just as big or bigger than adult troubles.
Yeah, so one of the very wise people in my life early on in my young adulthood, I was talking about one of my brother's challenges that she was very aware of. And here's what she said to me. She said, Glenn, nobody can understand somebody else's hell.
That's true.
That gave me a lot of empathy.
Yeah.
And
that's a tough thing. I think a lot of people feel very alone because of that. And I think that's part of the core sensibility that I work with in what I do, in that eventually what happens is that we have to become our own parents. We have to become our own safe person. We have to become the person that we trust. And that means learning to tell yourself the truth and learning to be honest with yourself and other people, so that when it comes down to it and you need to be able to face reality, if you can't tell yourself the truth, you won't know fact from fiction. It'll make you psychotic. So you've got to be able to trust yourself, and that means really laying the cards on the table.
One of the very powerful understandings of the gospel and our righteousness before God, which is universal, you guys, it's true for everybody. What we found, and by the way, it was 7 years ago tonight that we started the Wednesday Night Gospel Revolution webcast.
All right.
And what Michael taught, it was so profound, Chris, is that until one understands who they really are, that they really are one, that they really are one with the universe, with God, with humanity, and with themselves, you really can't be honest with yourself. The only way to be honest with yourself is to know that at the end, regardless of your behavior, regardless of your attitude, regardless of your actions, that you really are perfect and sinless and holy, and just you're just good. You're just good to go.
Well, you know, that really brings up a very important issue. When I'm speaking with people about the gospel, one of the things that comes up that people will stop me in mid-sentence about my explanation or about my analysis, and they'll say, you can't tell me that my experience, all right, of salvation or redemption, the thing that I felt in that moment wasn't real.
Correct.
You can't tell me that. And I certainly would not want to tell you that. I think that people experience that in different ways. Some people much more emotionally and with their inner core in a way that some people experience movies differently. You know, sometimes
right.
I cry like a baby at movies.
Right.
I have tremendous cathartic experiences in the movie house.
Yes.
But other people might sit at the same movie and go to sleep. Doesn't faze them at all. And I think the same thing is true of all human experience, and this one especially, when people are talking about they're having had a moment at which they really came to grips with themselves, it's a moment that's so cathartic and so real and palatable that they just simply can't ignore it. And the belief is that if you've had this experience, somehow that can't be true for everybody. It has to be that I own it and you don't, and you can't take that away from me. I certainly wouldn't take that away from anybody, and I have had the same experience myself, one that is so individuated and so personal that I can't put it away. And I was incapable, I think, in the beginning of actually putting that into some sort of an order. And later on, as I came to a greater understanding of the gospel, I was able to integrate that back in and say exactly what that was, where it was the point at which I knew internally the things that are taught really in the gospel structure are things that are true. And then when I was pre-gospel, I was fighting that the whole time, going, this has to be true. Why isn't this so? Why doesn't this make sense, and why isn't this biblical? And then later on, with a better reading, a closer reading, a more in-depth context, what I found was it was true. And my experience was something that was really biblical, and it made much more sense to me, and it became much more personal and even much more meaningful.
But at first, I didn't
know where to put that.
But the shame is that many people, obviously, even right now as we speak, most people don't have that experience of understanding their oneness, and therefore it becomes very difficult for them to be honest. If you can't be honest with yourself, you can't be honest with anybody.
Well, I think ultimately, though, it's difficult for all of us to be totally 100% honest at all.
Yeah, I'm not talking about being totally honest. I think that on some level, we can get there. I mean, I've shared certain things with you, as you have with me, and on the radio as well.
Sure.
That you know, pretty damn honest, and pretty, because, well, you really can't be 100% honest because you really don't know everything.
That's right, we don't, and I think that's why, instead of being guilty or shamed about it, what happens is that we see grace at work constantly. Instead of humiliation, we get mercy. And I think that's the wonderful thing about I think the expression that I've been using about this to help explain it is, I can afford to be merciful and humble and forgiving of other people because of the great bounty that I'm facing myself in unconditional love.
Right.
I can afford that. It's not going to cost me anything.
Right.
My emotional bank account is so full.
And the thing that I've noticed as I've publicly, or, you know, personally publicly, owned my shortcomings and have been forthright about it, on a certain level, one would expect people to recoil from that. And I suppose some people do.
Sure.
But I actually have noticed that, and observed, as we become the observers of our lives,
sure,
with the influence of this incredibly good news, I've noticed that actually people, far from recoiling from faults and failure and a lack of what certainly society would call a success, there's an embracing there. It's really been a remarkable experience.
Let me ask you about that. Could you characterize that as a face that says something like, "You too"? You know, are you having the same experience that I'm having?
Yeah, but no, I hear that, but I could totally relate to that. But I would say more than "you too." I would say it's almost like, damn it, I wish I could be that honest with myself. And there's a level of respect there that, I mean, I was very surprised at going down this path that I have been going down for many years now, and now certainly over these last many weeks with you. There's a level of admiration for somebody that is grappling in a open and transparent way with this thing called life.
Yeah.
And
there's definitely a payoff there. It's I talk about this with people a lot because you know, especially people who are broke, all right? And one of the things that comes up is that they feel shattered that they allowed themselves to get in this position, but secondly, they feel tied down and immobilized and locked down, tied down. And I asked them this question, would you rather have what you want or what you need?
What do you mean by that?
Well, those things that you want, you desire them. I want a hamburger, or I want a car, I want a house, I want a, you know, whatever. Would you rather have what you want, or would you rather have what you need?
But don't you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love?
Don't you want somebody? Listen to Sean. Sean
O'Halloran. Two lines there, so those are two different codes.
He's paying attention. I remember the great Rolling Stones called Satisfaction.
Yeah, right, right.
And they don't. They say, well, let's see. I don't. What is it? Damn it! There's a really powerful perspective in there. This is it. You don't always get what you want.
But if you try real hard,
sometimes you get what you need. And I mean, I remember talking about that as just an incredible. Clarifying statement, because even obviously we don't always get what we want. That's a good thing. Sometimes we don't even get what we need, but if we try real hard, sometimes we do. That's true.
Sometimes. And the thing is when you get what you need, if you have what you need, you don't lack anything. And in not lacking anything, you're instantaneously wealthy. Like if you said, for example, oh my God, I have to have a Ferrari. If I don't have a Ferrari, my life is over. And then you say, well, you know what? I could also sit down here by this river and I could watch the water float by. That didn't cost anything. If that satisfies me, if that meets my need, then the reality is I just saved myself $250,000. I'm instantly rich. Mm.
This is Glenn Klein.
I was lacking.
This is Glenn Klein Online. That's Chris Harrington. This is Chris Harrington's Reality. Sean O'Halloran just chimed in, just incredibly spontaneous.
I love that.
That was awesome. You can talk to Sean and therefore talk to Chris and myself at 1-800-436-3260. That is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline. 1-800-436-3260. All over the planet, you can call too at 813-425-5773. 813-425-5773. So I got to tell you, as we get more deeply into the work, as you call it, young man.
Yeah.
The mood tracker, I have not printed out the mood tracker yet, but I have been noticing me tracking my mood and thinking to myself, at the very least, after last week's discussion, where would I be on a mood today? Would I be at a 70 or an 80 or 90? The other thing that I have also not done has been doing a good job on making my list. I've been doing better, but not but not great. But even with not literally writing them down every single day, I still have it in my brain, and I'm noticing myself getting a lot more done. Even with sometimes not writing them down. Sometimes over these last few days, over the last week, I've noticed that when I have something in my head versus writing it down, I actually get more done in my head. Or not in my head, but coming from my thought process.
Sure.
And anyway, it's definitely been more productive, even though I am absolutely 100% dedicated to printing out those sheets, to filling them out, to
very
making
good.
The list. But it's a process.
It is a process, and I think digesting it and owning it. You know, it's like everything else. You can intellectualize it all you want. But what it gets down to is actually, you know, when the rubber hits the road, making use of it and applying it. And that's where you can increase your effectiveness.
And as you have said on several programs, it's all about the effectuality or the effectiveness.
That's right.
And so you want to take it over?
I do. I'm ready. We were talking last week. We had responsibility and liability. I like the sets of words, pairs of words. And then I talked about increasing our daily effectiveness. And I wanted to talk about a process called self-talk. Self-talk is it's the mumbling that you do. It's the way that you reference yourself. It's the communication that you use to talk yourself into or out of things constantly. And some people used to talk about this as having an angel on your shoulder, or you have a demon on one shoulder and an angel on
right,
the other shoulder.
Right, right. That's a classic Hanna-Barbera cartoon, I think.
Yeah, and I think the latest technology on that is they call that your emotional terrorist. And so if you have a terrorist on your shoulder, he's the one that's telling you, you can't do that. That's way over your pay grade.
Yeah,
beyond Chris, your capability.
But Chris, one's emotional terrorist is another emotional freedom fighter.
You know, I hear people say all the time
that was a joke, by the way.
When they're angry, they work harder. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw people over the years. I've seen a lot of people who would get angry on the racquetball court. They say when they're angry, they play harder and they go after it and they hit the ball harder and they really make it go and it just really, you know, sends them over the edge, right? And I look at those same people, and they quit racquetball 20 years ago because the stress that they put themselves under. Working under the guise of saying, if I'm angry, I'll be able to work harder. The work actually then sent them toward a point of stress where they might have had a heart attack.
Right.
And I always saw racquetball as a joke, something that was really fun. It was like dancing on a surfboard while playing chess and being the pool balls on the table all at the same time. And so I think of myself as snow skiing and playing basketball and doing all these different activities all at one time. It's just a blast. And I laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. This is my 42nd year of racquetball. Having a blast. So it might have been that they won those days when they were really angry. But you know what? I'm a turtle. I'm still at it. And I got further down the road playing the game because I enjoyed it more. And I think that's part of it is that if you're not enjoying the view, if you're not appreciating the journey that you're on, in fact, in Buddhism, they say that the journey itself is home. It's where you are right now. That's your destination. It's not something down the road. Mm. It's where you are in this moment.
I hear that.
Yeah. So I want to appreciate where it is. They say, also you hear people say, you know, stop and smell the flowers along the way.
Yes.
What they're saying is don't stay angry. Don't give yourself a heart attack. Don't freak out over things all the time. Just go ahead and work with it. And, you know, if life gives you lemons, make lemonade. You know, there are all those different corny ways of looking at it, but they work. You know, there's a truth behind each one of those sayings.
No doubt.
So I want to work with this emotional terrorist a little bit more and identify how this little squirrel runs his cage and keeps us upset, okay? So if your self-talk is you either telling yourself how to be at your best, being your best friend, right?
Yes.
Or it's you being your worst enemy, I have a choice. I want to be my best friend, so I'm going to have to reteach myself how to talk to myself. All right. Now, last week we talked about how if somebody of record, somebody that you really respect, somebody that you care about, somebody that you look up to tells you that you're stupid, you're going to need 10,000 positives, right?
Mm-hmm.
So imagine to yourself, you're saying, where did I put those stupid keys? I'm such a moron. Where did I put my glasses? Why am I late for work? Why can't I ever get up on time? If you tell yourself 150, 200, 300, 400, 500 negative things a day, how many pop things is it going to take for you to get yourself out of that hole?
Well, you said last week that for every positive or, for every 10,000.
Yeah.
No, excuse me. For every one negative statement, we need 10,000 positive statements to equal
right.
it out. And wait a second. I didn't ask you where you got that statistic from. I listened to the show and I thought, well, I mean, I can hear that, but you're saying it's 10,000 to one. 10,000,
yeah. I read it was a book on psychology, and they were talking about how when people, you know, get traumatized emotionally by something that somebody says, that that's the statistic. But I'll see if I can find it and bring it in. You're asking me, and I think it's a good question, because I want to be able to back this stuff up.
Yeah, I would have been surprised.
Somebody just blowing smoke.
Somebody asked me, where did that number come from? I said, that's a very good question.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
Although you did have the 150 million marbles in a pool, I don't think you can get 150 million marbles unless it's like a massive pool.
I think that's an exaggeration.
Yeah, right. So I thought the 10,000 to 1 was an exaggeration too, but you're telling me that you actually have a verifiable statistic for that.
Yeah, that's what they said. But let's say that it's a lot less than that. Maybe it's 1,000, or maybe it's only 500.
Right, but the other thing you said last week, and I think everybody can relate to this,
yeah,
is that it is so easy for our brain to go back to the negative.
Sure.
And it just naturally drawn like a magnet to it. So regardless of what the disproportion is, there is
sure.
no doubt that the negative can much more readily have an effect on our
sure.
soul than the positive, no doubt about it.
Yeah. And so then the question is how do we get around that? How do we retrain ourselves so that we can understand what amount of negativity that we're throwing at ourselves, and what do you replace it with? Again, replacement therapy, I think, is a really good idea. You take one thing out and you put something else in its place. So nature abhors a vacuum. You've got something you want to get rid of. Let's take something really positive and put it in its place. So if you're saying negative things, you're going to need positive things.
Now, right, because we're talking about self-talk at this point.
Self-talk, right. Yeah. So I went to John Bradshaw's little weekend retreat. It was called Healing the Shame That Binds You, Working with the Inner Child. Well, amazing, amazing stuff. And one of the things that he had us do was to stand up and talk about this child that was wounded inside of us and the things that had been said and everything that went on. And then he had us go through a sort of a dream ceremony where you actually went back to your house. You found yourself either playing in your room or asleep in your bed, and you woke yourself up, and you took yourself by the hand, and your adult self took your child self, walked it out the front door, down the sidewalk, and down the street, and said, we're on our own now. We're going to make it. I'm here for you. All right? And then he repeated phrases like this. I'm glad you're a girl. I'm glad you're a boy. I'm glad that you're here. You're a loving person. You're a kind human being. You're a compassionate human being. And all those positive affirmations were actually feeding that need, that hole that we have, so that we become the person of record. We become our safe person. We become the person that we needed to talk to all this time.
Mm. All right, we're going to take our break now, and
sure.
We're going to get back to this whole this self-talk thing, you guys. I know it's tripping your trigger, and we will get back with Chris and Chris Harrington's Reality right here on The Good News on Glenn Klein Online. The Good News on Glenn Klein Online is brought to you in part by thegurufgratitude.com.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come.
TheGuruOfGratitude.com, 888-493-7482. Beautiful humans, you want to make the money. How about make the money being nice?
I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder. Come on, the peace train. It's peace train, holy roller.
Everyone jump on the peace train. Ooh,
ooh, ooh, ooh. Come on, the peace train. Get your bags together. Go bring your good friends too. Cause it's getting nearer. And soon we'll be with you. Now come and join the living. Far from you, and it's getting nearer.
peace train sounded loud. Been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? 'Cause I'm on the edge of darkness.
The Guru of Gratitude.com. You guys can call toll free for more information. 888-493-7482. 888-493-7482. Get paid. Right. Being nice.
Come on, the peace train. This peace train will be rolling.
Everyone jump on the peace train. Come on.
Yes, come on, peace train. Hey, yes, it's the peace train.
That is one of the greatest songs ever.
Wonderful.
Cat Stevens on this Wednesday night. The good news on Glenn Klein Online with Chris Harrington's Reality. And are we more effective when we're more peaceful?
Man, I know we are. Because you give away too much energy just trying to keep the lies and the busyness and the craziness and the anger all going. It eats up your energy big time. Just sucks the life right out of you.
There's an amazing amount of anger that motivates people.
Yeah. Doesn't have to be.
All right. So
hey,
I'm
going to say I'm a great believer in identifying where we are so that we can map out a direction to our destination. So I was going to spend a couple seconds maybe reading some ideas I have behind terrorists would say.
And I want to hear that, but I just heard you say we want to map out a plan to get to a destination, but a few minutes ago you said it's not about the destination.
It's not.
So is the destination the journey?
The destination is the journey, and the mapping out is looking where you're standing right now. We know that there's going to be change, right?
Mm-hmm.
So while there's change, what I want to do is be able to, like, be on a surfboard and ride that change. I want to be able to use it for a fun activity. Change doesn't have to be horrifying. It can be incredibly fun. But it takes seeing it as a medium of exchange so that you can change who you were into who you're becoming. So you're constantly renewing your mind.
All right, so you said you got something to read.
Yeah, I do. I was thinking about what kinds of things the emotional terrorist would probably tell us. He'd say things like, you can't do that, or that's above your pay grade, you're not good enough, or you're unlovable, or you're stupid, right? Some people even have a complex about the social horrificness, all right? You like new words. Horrificness of ugliness, right? I find it really interesting that some people will center on whether their nose is big or their ears are too big or they've got some thing that they just completely are overwhelmed about, and yet it's a very small thing and insignificant, and probably nobody in the entire world sees it but them, but they are totally centered on it. So it becomes an obsession, and it rules their life. And that's what the emotional terrorist does. He gets you to center on something that makes you incapable of going ahead.
It's amazing.
So he'll tell you that you're insecure, that you're not capable, or that things are not going to work out, or that no one's going to listen to you anyway, and that life just sucks.
It's amazing how even the most beautiful supermodels have body issues.
Sure, absolutely.
I find great hope in that somehow.
You find something positive in somebody else's suffering, is that right?
Well, I wouldn't say in their suffering. I would say in the articulation and the honesty of their suffering.
Well, that they're all human. Yeah.
Right. I mean, if something really terrible. I mean, if Chris
about our present complex that we have as a social entity or as a culture, where we strive for pretending that we're perfect in our behavior or in our appearance.
No doubt.
Making people crazy.
I find some great hope in knowing that Christy Brinkley had body issues. I'm just typing right now. Just typing.
Well, somebody divorced her, right?
That's all you need to know. Is that Billy freaking Joel was married to Christy Brinkley, and they got a divorce.
Yeah, anybody.
That wasn't good enough for Billy Joel. That's all you need to know, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that's craziness.
All right, talk to me.
All right, so what's the antidote for that? How are we going to do? How are we going to get around this, right? We need to get healthy. We need to be ready to get totally transformed. We need to set up a program for taking care of things that are out of control. We need to limit the time with those who bring us down, and we need to change our self-talk. So we need an antidote, but first off, we need to know what our self-talk is. And so, you know, one of the things I've asked you to do is to make a list during the day of the things that you want to do. And another thing that you could do is making a list of the advice that you give to other people, because certainly that's advice that you need to take. We subconsciously give away our best advice to other people, but we hardly ever take it. Another thing that we throw out there, though, is in our negative self-talk, we say all the horrible things about ourselves. We repeat all the traumas that we've ever had when someone has said something horrible to us. You know, you're an idiot, you're this, you're that. Repeating those worst, awful moments over and over and over again, and we repeat them for life, like an echo that never stops. Well, today can be the last day. And you can just simply say, I'm replacing you're an idiot, all right, with you're an organized guy. And I know it because I took everything out of my pocket. I got my watch, and I've got my cell phone, and I've got my glasses, and I've got my wallet. And I put them in this little box or this bowl that's right here next to the front door so that when I get ready to go in the morning, I didn't lose anything. I know right where everything is. I'm totally organized. So I used to be this way, but now I'm this way. All right? I once was like that, but now I'm doing this. And that way you're reporting the transformation that you've made in your life. And you use that information, and you use it in such a way as that you transform a previous victimization into a victory. Something that used to be a problem is now a solution. Make sense?
You know, you guys, I know that putting a bowl out to put your watch and your wallet and your keys and sounds like a little thing, but I'm telling you, this little list that I've been making and accomplishing it, as I said earlier, most of the time, and making a list most of the time, Chris says you can make on your list making the list part of your list.
You bet.
And when you accomplish those things, all of a sudden...
Oh, I've started lower than that.
How low?
I will have a ballpoint pen. I will have a sheet of paper. I will number the page 1 through 5.
Yeah, that's 3.
All right? I will make a title on the top.
That's 4.
And I will put my name and date.
That's 5.
I haven't even written anything on the list yet, and I've already got 5 things.
Right. I can't tell you how... This is so unbelievably stupid. What a sense of accomplishment you have when you actually stick to something as retarded as that is. That's unbelievable.
But the thing is that if you start out paralyzed and you can move even one finger, you're happy as all
get
out.
No doubt. Dude, I mean, this hasn't been so very long ago, a few years ago, that for me, forward progress was getting out of the bed to take a leak.
Yeah. I really hear that.
And I know a lot of other people hear that, too. Some people don't get out of the bed. In Auschwitz, you didn't get out of bed, you were dead. You don't get out of bed, you're dead.
Sure.
So people kill themselves. They are doing it right now all over the planet as we speak. People are committing suicide. They're shooting themselves. They're hanging themselves. They're stuffing pills down their throat. They're fumigating themselves in their garage. Other people are committing slow suicide through just inordinately bad behavior, and it might take a while.
Right.
What's up? What's up with that?
It's people are stressed out to the max. It's the way that we identify ourselves, and and how we identify with our experiences. I certainly, I was talking to a member of our troops just today, and the conversation we had was concerning the number of months, not that there were a specific number, but that there have been many months when the number of people who died in service committing suicide was a larger number than the number of people being killed in combat.
Yep.
And it seems difficult for people to even imagine that that could possibly happen, even 1 month. And yet, there are many months when that's happened. And it's because when you see certain things, they can be so overwhelming that you can't face that this could possibly be real. It's overwhelming, and my heart totally goes out to those people and to their families and the stress that they're under and have been under. It's an amazing life that they live, and yet for those people who are able to survive it physically, to come back and still face those demons and the difficulty of what's happened and what's occurred and how it's happened and what they've experienced personally is totally overwhelming, and they deserve every bit of our gratitude and our support on every level.
No doubt. One of the things that we're learning through this most recent military conquest of the United States is the issue of brain trauma in all this, not to mention what's been going on in the National Football League. I was just visiting my son Jake in Oceanside, and we drove right by Junior Seau's apartment where he committed suicide. His house on the ocean there. Think about, Chris, how many people throughout their lives, where they had a car accident, they fell off their bike, they're playing football, whatever it is, they got slapped silly when they were a kid. How much brain trauma is affecting this self talk? This emotional terrorist.
It's true.
It's really, you guys, give yourself a break. The only way that I'm able to go through this process is by giving myself a break and understanding, as I did when I was in seventh grade. I remember when I was in seventh grade, Chris, and I was an upper level student, you know, an upper, you know, 10%, 15% or whatever. Uh-huh. I was no genius by any means, but I got good grades. I remember I was taking an SAT test or some sort of aptitude test in seventh grade in my junior high cafeteria. And, you know, I don't know what the kids do today, but, you know, you have the little number two pencils and you fill in the ovals.
Sure.
And there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of questions. And I was at a part where I had absolutely zero idea what was going on. And I looked around at this cafeteria filled with probably close to 900 kids, a huge school. And I thought to myself, if I don't get this, how many other kids in this room do not?
Right.
And I think I filled, you know, in that section, I just filled out all C's. I just want C's. I'm going to get some of them right, right? I think one of the problems is, and one of the parts of the self-talk you're talking about, is that we just are so hard on ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Is this part of the wrong questions we're asking?
Well, I think the question that we ask, you know, is what do I need to do in order to please God? I think that's the question that we ask, all right?
Wow.
I think a better question would be, how magnificent is God that he loves me unconditionally?
Once, you know, obviously a lot of the people that are listening to this right now understand exactly what you just said. But once we understand that God does love us unconditionally, that everybody's equal and one with God, do we continue to do that? Or how much do we continue to do that with people in our lives, with expectations of society? Do we make gods out of things that, you know, Christianity or Islam or Judaism would not be able to relate to?
Well, I think it's, for me, the way that I look at things, I have to take the morality out of it because I really believe that being good is way above my pay grade. So I have to look at it in terms of saying, and that's not a negative. That's not my inner terrorist getting after me. I think that's grace operating in my life. I don't have to operate under that law. There's a much higher law that says I'm loved unconditionally. But people will say, oh, you mean I can do whatever I want and God's not going to be mad at me? And I say, sure, why not? And they say, I can kill somebody? And I ask them this question, is that what you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
No, but you mean I could? Well, I'll answer your question once you answer my question. Let's go there first. Is this the first order of business? Being absolutely free in the world to do anything you wanted, that's what you would do with your freedom? No, I just wanted to know. Well, I don't see that it's really a question that has any substance if it's not something that you're willing to do. Oh, okay. It takes care of itself. All you do is just follow the logic of it. I mean, to me, the gospel is a very logical thing. You know, if God loves us unconditionally, what follows from that? You know, everything.
or perhaps us contemplating, at least, loving ourselves unconditionally.
Yes.
And if we're not a complete hypocrite and we love ourselves unconditionally, then that we could extend that to a few more folks. Like, oh, I don't
sure.
know, everybody,
you know,
everybody
if
else.
I'm loving myself and I love other people like I love me, and I love me unconditionally and I love them unconditionally, what harm will I be doing to anyone?
Dude, I remember the night, and I talked about it on the show, that President Obama came out and said that Osama bin Laden was dead.
Yeah.
And I was not rejoicing like the people were for his death, but I swear to God that I was emotional that he was finally freed from his self-talk, from his hatred, and I was thrilled. I mean, I know this sounds bizarre, you guys, but I was thrilled that for whatever eternity is, whatever peace with God is forever, that he now knew it and he was there. That thrilled my soul, Chris. I it would be a hypocrite to want something for myself that I don't want for everybody else, including Osama frickin' bin Laden. I mean, that, seriously, I love telling people that Hitler's in heaven, whatever heaven is.
Sure.
I love it as a Jewish guy.
Yeah.
And I cannot recommend being consistent enough. You guys, if you're going to embrace and accept God's unconditional love for you, how do you not extend that to everybody else?
It's true. And the other thing is I think a lot of people ask me, well, if this is already a done deal, why would you talk about it? And I think I mentioned this last time. I can't shut up about it.
I was going to say, what else is better to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, it's the height of substance in terms of saying, if love is what it's all about, what about unconditional love? I mean, that takes it up a notch, doesn't it?
Yep, it sure does.
So it just seems to me like it's a wonderful resource to use in any conversation.
This is Glenn Klein Online. It's the good news. That is Chris Harrington, Chris Harrington's Reality. All right, we got a few more minutes, buddy.
Okay, man.
You have some questions for me perhaps tonight?
I don't know if I have any questions. I wanted to pass a couple. We've been doing little things that we could do to increase our effectiveness, right?
Indeed.
I got three more for you today.
All right, go.
All right, here we go. A journey map. Whenever you're going to go somewhere for the day and you've got 4, 5, 6 places that you need to go, some people will just go to one place and then they go to another place, they go to another place. But if instead you got a little sheet of paper out and you mapped out all the places you're going to go and you made it into a circle so that you were using the best time, best resources, best use of your gasoline, all right? Instead of crisscrossing town 4 or 5 times, or forgot this, or forgot that, get all the places that you're going to go, put it on a map, and make a big circle out of it so that you can make the most effective use of your gasoline, most effective use of your time.
There's that word, effective.
Yeah, I like that.
Again.
I've got two more for you, okay?
Yep.
I've got a, you know, do you know the expression CRS?
No.
Yeah, some people say I can't remember a sheet. Is what I have here is a can't remember sheet. And what it is a list of the words that I have the hardest time remembering that I need to use.
Like what?
Well, I've got a list here, and I have 12 words on my list already. I've been using this for about a year and a half. And these are 12 words that I have a hard time remembering in context when I need to use them. All right? Conflict of interest. I've looked it up on the internet like 100 times. It's like one of those things that I just can't remember it. But I have a list right here, and I keep it in my wallet at all times. All right, second one, the word performance. I don't know why, but it just seems to be one of those things that just skips right by me. How about this? Politically correct. I can't remember that expression.
Really?
Yeah. Here's another one, counterintuitive. Now, you know, it's like, you know, there are certain people you just can't remember their name. You've learned it like 50 times, but other people, you know it, and you, every time, wham, I got it, you know?
Right.
But this one person is like, what is this person's name again? So, counterintuitive. How about this one, Albert Ellis?
What's up with that?
Albert Ellis is the inventor of REBTs, a wonderful cat that came up with this incredible concept in psychology. And I just have had a hard time remembering his name, so I just wrote it down on my list. How about this one, Ann Coulter?
You mentioned Ann Coulter a few weeks ago.
I can't remember her name.
But you mentioned Ann Coulter a few weeks ago on the radio show.
Yeah, I know. Awesome. It just popped up.
That's awesome.
Here's one for you, Mashup.
Mashup.
A mashup. You know what a mashup is?
No.
You take two songs and you kind of like jam them together, yeah. and they become a single song.
Did you know? Did you know that it was a mashup song?
Mashup. Yeah. How about this word? Indifference.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Counterinsurgence.
Mm-hmm.
And the word entitlement. I don't know why, but the word entitlement escapes me all the time. And then the word archive.
Which is funny, since the show is archived.
Yeah, that's funny. And I can remember it in certain situations, but there are other ones like I need to look up the archive of something, and I'll go, it's the past. What's the past thing? That thing, the past thing? I made a little list, and I call it the CRS Can't Remember Sheet.
There is a word right now that is on my list. I never knew I had a list until now.
Yeah.
That I can't think of right now. And I absolutely know what it is. But
I have a solution for that, okay?
Make a list.
All right, yeah, that's making a list. But I have even a solution for that.
Yeah.
All right? You take a single sheet of paper, and you fold it into 1/4 squares, and you put it in your back pocket or in your purse. And this is called my secret weapon, okay?
Mm-hmm.
At all times, I have a sheet of paper that I can use to write full sentences on instead of a scrap of paper, and that way I could punch holes in it and put it in a notebook or whatever I needed to do. But what it is my secret weapon is my note sheet, so that I have a little book. Sometimes people will buy these little quarter-size notebooks, or they'll have, and your telephone will take dictation or whatever. But if you don't have anything and your battery is dead on your phone, then you need a secret weapon, and what that I know this sounds really simple and stupid, but it's a single sheet of paper that you fold it in fourths and you slip it into your pocket. And, of course, this means that you have to have a ballpoint pen or a pencil with you at all times.
Right.
But I always do. I'm a poet, and so I got to have that. And so what I do is I keep a ballpoint pen in my pocket and my secret weapon, and if I need to write a poem or I got to make a list or I need to write something down or I have a new word to put on my CRS list, mm-hmm. I have it right there, and then I unfold it at night, and I disperse my information where I need to go, and then I fold up a new sheet of paper and put it in my back pocket and start all over again.
And what's number three?
That was number three.
Oh.
So I had my map for map. Making a round town,
right.
And my CRS
list,
and my secret weapon.
And having the secret weapon, right?
Yeah.
All right, dude. We'll continue.
I love it.
Well, that's what we do, you guys. Let us hear from you this week. Tell people about the show, and you can sign up for the newsletter at glennkleinonline.com. And go to Chris's Facebook at Chris Harrington.
Yeah, be effective. It's right there. You can have it for free.
And the whole thing's there for free. And let people know about the archive. Cannot thank you enough, Chris.
Thank you, man.
All right. Thanks to Sean O'Halloran. Thank you guys for listening. And until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying shalom, everybody.